Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With the 32nd pick in the 2019 NFL Draft, the New England Patriots select N'Keal Harry, wide receiver, Arizona State.
All right. Did you forget about that guy, N'Keal Harry? Well, guess what? He was back on the practice field today for the Patriots. He is off IR, not technically off IR, but he's eligible to practice. Today was the first day he could practice, and he was on the football field. Now, he cannot play until week 9 against the Baltimore Ravens, but a good sign for the Patriots. He was dealing with ankle issues over the preseason, etc. Before that, he was dealing with like a little bit of a hamstring or a groin issue. He's just banged up during training camp. So they put him on IR to begin the season, but he's officially practicing now, which is nice to see out of a guy that you took with your first round pick this season. So what should we expect from N'Keal Harry when he comes back and he's actually on the field for the Patriots? 617-779-7937. Again, 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you for the next 2 hours or so. I got to say this, I'm actually excited to finally see the guy. Now, the only thing that sucks is he was just practicing today, and we don't get to see him in actual game action until week 9 against the Baltimore Ravens. So that's what kind of stinks about this whole situation. But remember, this is the first receiver that Bill Belichick has ever selected in the first round. So at some point, you'd like to see this guy actually get onto the football field, and at least we see him in practice today, right? At least you can see some highlights from him running around at practice. It's like a white whale or something. Like, you never see the guy, and finally, he's emerged. So a couple of things here, because we're getting closer to the trading block, and the trading deadline this year is October 29th. So we all expect that the Patriots are going to make some sort of move, and I'll get into some of the names out there in just a couple of minutes on who the Patriots could possibly target. But I believe the Patriots move, what they do in terms of who they go after, who they acquire at the deadline, it's going to tell you a lot about what they think of N'Keal Harry. So, for example, if they go after one of the premier guys, the A.J. Greens of the world, the Stephon Diggses of the world, if those guys do truly become targets, if they're on the market, so to speak, even though the teams have both denied that they're going to put them out there, if those guys become targets, well, that means that I look at this as they don't expect N'Keal Harry to be a big contributor this season. If they go after a big name guy, they're essentially saying, okay, N'Keal Harry, he can be the third, maybe the fourth option. Maybe in the future, he essentially, now you would hope in the future, he becomes the number one guy because you selected him with a 32nd overall pick, right? So eventually you're hoping he can be that guy, but let's not put a whole lot of pressure on the kid this particular season, especially considering that he came off IR. But if the Patriots make one of these minor moves, whether it's in O.J. Howard, the tight end for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, if it's a guy like Mohamed Sanu, who essentially is the third or fourth option, really, you would say the fourth option right now in Atlanta, because you have Julio Jones, you have Calvin Ridley, Austin Hooper's been tremendous for them. So he's really the fourth option there with the Atlanta Falcons. So if they go after a guy like Sanu, or they go after a guy like O.J. Howard, that's telling you that they have a lot of faith and N'Keal Harry to come back onto the field as a rookie, or come onto the field, I should say, as a rookie, and play a major role where he can be the number two option behind a guy like Julian Edelman. That's where you have to look at the personnel they pick up at the deadline, and that's going to tell you what they actually think of this current receiving core, and more importantly, what they think of the white whale, essentially, because we never see the guy, what they actually think of N'Keal Harry, and what they think he can actually bring to the team in the 2019 season. So what they do at the deadline could dictate what they think of the player. 617-779-7937, the number. Brian Barrett with you for the next 2 hours or so. So here's my rationale on why I'm not going to be too optimistic about N'Keal Harry being a major contributor in 2019. Now, if he is, I'll be happy to eat crow. This will be the cherry on top of the sundae for the Patriots if he actually contributes at a high level. And he looks like a number one weapon right away, and he's an absolute stud. I'll be happy to see that from a Patriots perspective, obviously. But I have my doubts about the guy being a major contributor to the team in 2019. First of all, let's point out the obvious. Since he's been a Patriot, he's been hurt. The guy's been hurt since he's been a member of the Patriots. So that's a concern going forward. Does he have durability issues? Because first it was one thing in the preseason, then it was an ankle issue, then he couldn't start the season. So there's that with N'Keal Harry. Is he going to be a durable player just in this season? I'm not talking about his long-term career, but I'm talking about in 2019 because he started off, he was playing in preseason. Everybody's giving him rave reviews, etc. He had the nice catch in the preseason game. Then all of a sudden, we essentially have not heard from the guy since, right? So the injury concerns. The other thing I would point out is Tom Brady's relationship with rookie wide receivers. Now, you've heard him this season talking about the young guys in terms of the receiving crew when he said, what, 3 weeks ago now, that it's really tough for those guys to pick up the playbook. They ask a lot of their receivers. There's a lot there. So Brady's already alluded to the fact this year that it's tough for young guys to pick everything up. And we've seen Brady's relationship with rookie wide receivers in the past and young guys in the past. It hasn't worked out for the best. Now, Malcolm Mitchell eventually caught on at the end of the season. He tried to make it work with guys like Aaron Dobson and Kembrell Tompkins. Now, they put up some numbers, but they were never really the guys that Brady wanted, right? So when you look at Brady's relationship with young receivers, we've seen it over time. It doesn't usually work out. It's usually guys that have been in the system for a while. Edelman was here for a while, worked his way in to Brady's good side, and made a role for himself on this team, right? So it normally takes a while for these guys to hit with Tom Brady. The other thing that I would point out is Bill Belichick's history of drafting receivers. Now, I understand that Bill Belichick's the best coach of all time, and he's going to go down as one of the best executives of all time as well, but he does have his blind spots, and one of those blind spots has been the receiver position over the years. So you really think about the recent draft history. Braxton Berrios, he's playing for the Jets. He was cut. Malcolm Mitchell, I mean, he worked out fine, but again, the guy only played a year because he was having knee issues. Then you look at somebody like Aaron Dobson, he sucked. Josh Boyce, he sucked. Taylor Price, who's that, right? Taylor Price, remember that guy? Probably don't. Brandon Tate, didn't really work out. Chad Jackson, Bethel Johnson, like for the most part, Bill Belichick drafting receivers, it hasn't been a strong part of his resume, so to speak. Okay, you can give me Julian Edelman, who, how much credit do we give Bill Belichick for that? He drafted him, what, the sixth or the seventh round, and he was a quarterback? Did he know that he was going to be one of the best slot receivers in the history of the sport? No, because I go back in time to the fact that he went after Danny Amendola and gave Danny Amendola a decent-sized contract when Wes Welker, or when Belichick decided not to pay Welker, and Welker departed for Denver. Remember, Danny Amendola was supposed to be Julian Edelman before Julian Edelman took over that role, and he was just too damn good, and he's turned into a guy that is a borderline Hall of Famer now, right? So even then, he didn't know what Julian Edelman was truly going to become. He thought Danny Amendola was going to play that role because he gave Danny Amendola the big contract, right? So even Julian Edelman, that's kind of like, how much credit does he really get? Now, Deion Branch, all right. Deion Branch in the second round of the 2002 draft, that's a pick that clearly Bill Belichick hit out of the park. But for the most part, Bill Belichick has not been great when it comes to drafting receivers. What Bill Belichick's been good at over the years is Belichick's been able to evaluate NFL receivers and say, okay, Wes Welker, this is a guy that in Miami was underutilized. I can get a lot out of the player, or a lot more, I should say, out of the player than what the Miami Dolphins were getting out of him. So he brings in a guy like Wes Welker. We mentioned a guy like Danny Amendola. They bring in Danny Amendola, and he didn't live up to what they thought he was going to be in terms of, they thought he was essentially going to be Julian Edelman. But I think everybody would agree that Danny Amendola was worth it for the Patriots. The guy was an incredibly clutch player in the postseason over the years. Remember that game against Jacksonville? Of course, Edelman wasn't playing because he had the injury that year, and Rob Gronkowski went down with a concussion in that game, and Danny Amendola came up with so many clutch catches in that game. You go back to the Atlanta Super Bowl, he was phenomenal in that game as well. So we've seen how good Danny Amendola was. So Danny Amendola, another guy that you give Bill Belichick credit for, that he identified and said he's going to be a key contributor to this team. You also think about a guy like Brandon LaFell, who most people in this town never heard of Brandon LaFell before he became a member of the Patriots. He comes over to the Patriots and he contributes at a high level to the point where on that team that won the Super Bowl in, 2014, he was actually a key contributor on that team and did his work outside the numbers, but he caught on to the Patriots system. Another guy like a Brandon Lloyd, and I get Josh McDaniels gave Bill Belichick the assist on this one, but Brandon Lloyd had a couple of nice years for the Patriots when he came over, played for a bunch of teams, the Niners, and remember McDaniels had that short stint in St. Louis when the Rams were there as the offensive coordinator, brings in a guy like Brandon Lloyd, and he actually performs at a high level. So when you look at it from Bill Belichick's perspective, he's been good with developing receivers from different teams and identifying receivers on different teams that could contribute on the Patriots in a major role, and they'd be much better in the Patriots system than they were in other systems. That's what Belichick's been good at. He's never been the greatest at drafting receivers. I think we can all acknowledge that's been kind of a blind spot for Bill Belichick over the years. 617-779-7937. So for those reasons, I just can't depend on the player. Belichick's track record of drafting receivers, Brady's relationship with young receivers, it just doesn't add up to something I'm going to depend on in the 2019 season. Now, if it actually hits, and N'Keal Harry actually turns out to be a force this season, it'll be the cherry on top of the sundae. It'll be gravy. And I'll be incredibly happy that he actually contributes. I just don't see it happening this particular season. I don't think you can depend on a rookie. So that brings me to essentially some of the guys that are now out there in terms of the trading block. Now, essentially today on NBC Sports Boston, Phil Perry and Tommy Curran of NBC Sports Boston, they had a list of the possible trade targets that the Patriots could go after. One of them is Stephon Diggs. Now, the problem for Stephon Diggs is he just went off. He had 7 catches, $167, 3 touchdowns, and they're now 4-2 on the season. So the Minnesota Vikings are going to believe they're still in the hunt, and they are. They're still in the hunt to get into the postseason. Now, I don't believe this is a team that's a legitimate threat to win a Super Bowl or anything along those lines, but when I look at Stephon Diggs, I don't see him being on the market just because you just signed him to a 5-year extension. If you're the Minnesota Vikings, your team's 4-2 right now. It finally seems like Stephon Diggs is now in the good graces of Kirk Cousins, and it seems like that offense is clicking over the past couple of weeks in terms of the Minnesota Vikings, so I don't see that as a likely guy that the Patriots could go after. Now, if he becomes available, this is a guy that I would go after. He's only 26 years old. You're going to get him in the prime of his NFL career, if you will, where he's only under contract till he's 29 years old. I get it's a long contract, 4 more years, but again, the guy's going to be 29, so you're going to get most of his prime years, and this particular season, he's averaging like 68 yards per game. So he's been a pretty good player. If you could get him, I would go out there and get him. Another guy that's going to be out there is Emmanuel Sanders. The problem with the Emmanuel Sanders deal and possibly going after a guy like Emmanuel Sanders, the issue I see with the Patriots with this one is, think about it, if you're John Elway, there's going to be other teams that are interested in acquiring a guy like Emmanuel Sanders. Why would you send him to the New England Patriots, who you've done battle with over the past couple of years? And I get the past 2-3 years, you haven't been great. But remember, you played the Patriots in 2 AFC title games. If you can send him off to the NFC, send him to Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, or send him off to Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks, you would much rather do business with those teams than helping the Patriots kind of solve some of their offensive woes. So I don't see Emmanuel Sanders as a likely guy. A.J. Green, final year of his contract, only 31 years old. Now, he is coming off an ankle injury, so you'd have to make sure that the player is healthy, okay? Obviously, you're going to make sure he's healthy before you can actually acquire him. But A.J. Green, and I understand it right now, the Bengals are saying, oh, he's not in the market, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You have the head coach saying that. Well, I mean, if you're going to be in a situation, if you're the Cincinnati Bengals and you suck right now, you don't have 1 win on the season, if you're the Cincinnati Bengals, what's the point of hanging on to A.J. Green? So they can say all this crap right now, but if you look at it from their angle on all this, what are they going to say? Oh, we're definitely putting him on the market. No, you play the leverage game. You say, ah, we're not trading him. We're not trading him. And then it comes in a couple of weeks, ah, unless we're overwhelmed by an offer. Now, if you can get this guy, he's 31 years old. He has had no issues off the field whatsoever, right? He's the opposite of Antonio Brown. No issues whatsoever. And he's been in Cincinnati playing essentially with an awful quarterback in Andy Dalton. If you can get A.J. Green here, he'd be like the perfect Patriot because there's no issues. He can play multiple different wide receiver positions. He would be a massive upgrade with this team in terms of the receiver position. I don't have to tell you. And the fact he doesn't come with baggage like Antonio Brown did. O.J. Howard's another guy Tommy Curran points out. The problem with O.J. Howard is he's less involved in the offense this year than he's been even going back to last year. And I do wonder this with O.J. Howard. Now, because the Patriots have no tight ends whatsoever, I wouldn't mind the move. But the thing that I would question about O.J. Howard is this. You have an offensive guru, so to speak, although I think we overuse that terminology, the quarterback whisperer, etc. But Bruce Arians comes to Tampa this year, and he's supposed to be a guy that helps the offense. Now, Jameis Winston sucked the other day, 5 interceptions. But nonetheless, O.J. Howard is less involved in the offense this year than he's been in previous seasons with Bruce Arians. Maybe some of it you can say is the system, but O.J. Howard has never really delivered since he's been in the NFL. Now, I'd like him as like a project guy, but I don't think that's a player that you can depend on in 2019. 617-779-7937 is the number. What do you expect from N'Keal Harry when he essentially gets onto the football field? He's practicing now, but when he plays, do you have high expectations for the player? And who do you want to see the Patriots go after in the trading market? Let's get to Mike. He's in North Providence. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Brian. Yeah, with regards to N'Keal Harry, I'm very positive on him. I expected them to draft a wide receiver in the first round and a big wide receiver because Belichick's been trying to bring those guys in for a while anyways. He tried to do that last year. And it's not just about the passing game. And as a playmaker in the passing game, as a target, and especially in the red zone, I think he's going to be important. But it's the impact on the running game by having a big guy like him and with Josh. You pair that with a tight end. It's like you're having three tight ends on the field, despite the fact that two of them are technically wide receivers. I mean, these are really big guys. Both of them are bigger than Shannon Sharp. You know, I mean, this is, you're talking about, and
Harry goes about 6'4", 225.
Yeah, I mean, you know, N'Keal Harry bench pressed that 225 at the combine 27 times in a row. He's as strong as a linebacker. I mean, he really is. Very powerful man, and Josh is a big, I mean, hell, let's just look at Josh. So it's one of these things where I think running single back, right, with no fullback in there, with those two on the perimeter, it gives a lot of flexibility. It makes the other team guess. I think we talked about this in the past.
Yeah.
Just not being predictable and getting the running side of the game going. And people have a tendency, especially we went through the whole, you know, years of Smurfs being out there with Tom, of thinking of them strictly as being pass catchers. But that running game is very important to this team. And getting our running back core, you know, kind of like going, I think is a big thing for this team going forward.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I appreciate the phone call, Mike. And it's interesting, too, what you say about the running game is maybe now, if you be less predictable, rather than, because last year you had the personnel to just line up in the I formation if you were the Patriots, because you had James Devlin, you had Trent Brown, you had Rob Gronkowski, you had David Andrews, right? You had a great offensive line last year. This offensive line is not great right now. It's not. That's the reality of the situation. Plus, you're down two fullbacks. So if you're going to run the ball with a high level of success, maybe you have to be less predictable. Last year, you could line up against the Chargers, whoever it was, the Chiefs in the playoffs, and you could say, hey, we're going to run it out of the I formation, and you're not going to be able to stop us. Now, some of it had to do with the Chargers and the Chiefs defensively, but it also had to do with that was the strength of the team. And now clearly we were seeing this year when they tried to do that, it wasn't effective whatsoever. So maybe the team being less predictable in terms of not having a fullback right now, maybe that actually will help the running game and help open some holes for Sony Michel that the defense wasn't expecting before. Let's get to David in Florida. What's up, David?
You know, I mean, I just can't get worried about the Patriots. I mean, I'm almost watching, as much as I complained about how angry I would get watching those Bozo Red Sox over the season.
Yeah.
That's how bored I am watching the Patriots because, I mean, there's no reason to worry.
So you got no concerns, David, whatsoever about the offense?
No, yes, the offense is not very, I mean, this is probably the weakest offense they have talent-wise in maybe
years. I'd say since 06 when you had, like, Rashay Caldwell leading the team in receiving.
Yeah, and the Gaffney, yeah. But, I mean, first of all, the defense is so – well, I mean, you know what, too? I mean, if you're going to make the argument that the offense hasn't beaten anybody, then the defense really hasn't played any super offense yet.
Yeah, and that's fair. But so, don't you have more – David, right now, don't you have more faith in the Patriots' defense than the Patriots' offense? I don't see the Patriots' defense being an issue.
Well, the defense has looked very, very, very good so far. But who are the next four games against? They got the Jets Monday night, then they got Cleveland afterwards. Is that right?
Yeah, and Cleveland has not been good. Then you got Baltimore, and then you're going to get teams like the Cowboys and the Eagles. You got
let's see what happens when they play Baltimore and then the Eagles. And if the defense can still hold them under 15 points, maybe even 20 at the most.
David, I think the thing about the defense too is remember this in the Super Bowl last year they were dominant. They held the Rams,
that's
who were
true.
The second highest scoring team of the NFL, to three points. So this isn't just something that just started this year.
No,
it happened last year at the end of the season as well. You had a Red Sox point, by the way.
The Red Sox. First of all, how much time do you give Corbin next season? I really want to start talking about what they're going to do in the offseason, because I'm just so disgusted with them. And I give Cora, no more than 2 weeks into the regular season. And I want to see
2 weeks
from spring, 2 weeks, and I mean that, because that's how deplorable I think he was this past year.
Well, and I will agree with you on this point, David, and I appreciate the phone call. I will agree with you on this point. Cora basically did not get the blame for a lot of issues that the Sox had this year. Okay, so Dave Dombrowski's the guy that was shown his walking papers. Dana Lavangi, they said, hey, his philosophy from a pitching perspective is old and it's not going to work anymore. We're going to go with the analytical approach. And Cora got off easy. You can't justify the Mookie Betts, Andrew Benintendi switch up in the lineup. Now, maybe if you wanted to do that at the beginning of the season, fine. I never agreed with it to begin with. But nonetheless, you can't wait 57 games to put Mookie back in the leadoff spot. You had Chris Owings leading off a game. Nobody ever heard of him. They DFA'd him in Kansas City. He led off a game when the Red Sox were still on the run. Nobody ever heard of him. He makes his debut with the Red Sox. He's leading off. That made no sense. The plan they had coming into the season for the starting pitchers to get them ready to basically make sure they were ready later on in the season, that backfired. It didn't work at the beginning of the season. They all sucked. And then at the end of the season, the point was so those guys would be healthy down the stretch, and Price was hurt and Sale was hurt. Now, I'm not saying that's 100% why, but I'm saying this whole plan you came up with, it didn't work. So I thought the Cora did get off easy this year, because basically the blame was pointed everywhere but Cora. Everywhere but Cora. Now, to say that he should be fired 2 weeks into next season, if you're bringing him back, you're giving him the year. That's the reality of the situation. And I don't think Cora is a bad manager. I don't think he had a good year. 2 years ago, he was great. Last year, he did not have a great year. And I think this whole organization was high on its own supply, where they thought they could just do everything they did in 2018 and it would duplicate itself in 2019. And clearly, we're finding out that was not the case. All right, the number is 617-779-7937. What are your expectations for N'Keal Harry when he comes back? Do you want to see the Patriots go out and make a move? What name? Do you want a big name in A.J. Green or a smaller name like a Mohamed Sanu? We'll get into all that. But before we do any of that, we'll get you trending right here on WEI.
This is Boston Sports Station. Now here's what's trending on WEEI.
Here's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. Some drama with the Patriots. Ian Rapoport reports that Michael Bennett has been suspended 1 week for conduct detrimental to the team. He will miss Monday night's game against the Jets. Bennett got into a disagreement with Pat's assistant coach Brett Bielema. Bennett released a statement to ESPN saying, quote, "On Friday, I had a philosophical disagreement with my position coach that has led to my suspension. I apologize to my teammates for any distraction this may have caused." Bennett played a season-low 11 snaps against the Giants last week. Some good news on the injury front. Rookie N'Keal Harry returned to practice today. Harry is eligible to play in Week 9 against the Baltimore Ravens. Blockbuster deal in the NFL. Adam Schefter reporting the Jaguars have traded cornerback Jalen Ramsey to the Rams for 2 first-round picks and a 4th-round pick. Earlier in the day, L.A. sent defensive back Marcus Peters to the Ravens for a 5th-round pick. The Seas beat the Cavs 118-95 at a preseason game. Rookie Carson Edwards led the team with 30 points. The Green kept their main rotation guys home. Kemba Walker, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward, Marcus Smart, Enes Kanter, and Daniel Tice all given the night off. This was the final preseason tune-up for the Seas. They'll visit the Sixers on the 23rd to open up the regular season. The Astros beat the Yankees 4-1 to take a 2-1 lead in the best-of-7 series. Game 4 scheduled for Wednesday night in New York, weather permitting. It's supposed to be nasty there tomorrow. The Nationals just beat the Cardinals 7-4, and that completes a 4-game sweep for Washington. They are heading to the World Series. They'll, of course, await the winner of the Astros-Yankees series. That's what's trending now on WEI and WEEI.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Center field. This should do it. Robles will squeeze it. Washington Nationals are National League champions. There will be a World Series in D.C.
All right, that was the call tonight on TBS. Brian Anderson, who called that Celtics-Bucks series a couple of years ago. Not this one, but the one 2 years ago, he called that series. 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you for the next 90 minutes or so. So how about that? The Washington Nationals have clinched a spot in the World Series. Made easy work of the Cardinals. Jeez. Cardinals couldn't get one win in the series. Finally, they scored some runs tonight, but geez, Strasburg shut him down. Scherzer shut him down. And how about the fact that Bryce Harper, he just signs that huge contract north of $300 million to go to the Philadelphia Phillies. And I'm sure that he's having fun with all the money in the world that he has, but that's got to suck, right? You're watching your former team. Basically, when you leave, they win their first playoff series, and now they're making it all the way to the World Series without you. And maybe the Red Sox should take note of this. Now, they didn't decide to pay this guy $30 million, whatever he wanted, something along those lines. You could go out there and get some role players. Anibal Sanchez, put him into the rotation. Howie Kendrick came in big in the postseason, so you can pay some other guys. It's made them a little bit more flexible from a financial perspective. At the Red Sox deal with a similar situation, they're looking to decide whether or not they want to play a player that may not want to be here in Mookie Betts. I don't know. Maybe this is a situation they should look at and say, hey, look what happened to the Nationals after they decided to let Bryce Harper, or they actually tried to sign him, and he just decided to go to the Philadelphia Phillies. But man, it's got to be a tough, tough couple of days for Bryce Harper watching these guys go to the World Series without him.
He's already all over Twitter for, remember when he messed up in his press conference?
No, what'd he say? Oh, did he essentially say that he wanted a chance to win?
That's what I want to do. You know, we want to bring a title back to D.C. Back to D.C.
Back to D.C. Back to D.C.
Yeah, wants to bring a title to D.C. Well, they may do it without you, Bryce. Although, I would look at this Nationals team. They have not just, like, the worst bullpen in the playoffs. They had, like, one of the worst bullpens in baseball this year. They have two reliable relievers, Hudson and Doolittle. So that's going to be the issue when you get into playing a series against whether it's the Astros or the Yankees. You got the starting rotation with Strasburg, and Sanchez has thrown the ball well, and Scherzer's a stud. But if you get into a World Series with the Yankees and the Astros, the problem is your bullpen arms are going to get exposed. Let's get to Paul. He's in Westfield. What's up, Paul?
Hey, good evening, Brian. I got three rounds, three questions for the Barrett Starrett.
What's up, man?
First one is this. We've heard you rip and shred Phony Michelle, and you've also ripped.
Well, I don't call him phony though, Paul. That's Mark with a C. But I'm not the biggest fan of Sonny Michel.
Yes, sir. I apologize. That is Mark. You bring up a good point that he's had terrible yards. You also brought up a good point. Our left tackle is a turnstile, and Michelle's style is to set up, observe an opening and run. So is it fair to say that his crud front line that gives him no push and protection and openings is why he has no yards per game, unlike the one time they did, he got like 96 yards?
Yeah, that's obviously, Paul, the big issue with this team is the offensive line. But my whole point with Sonny Michel is he's never a guy that makes people miss. Like, he gets into the open field, he doesn't make anybody miss. And a lot of these running backs, the elite guys in the league, sometimes they make the offensive line look better. And part of it is probably because he was a first-round pick, Paul. The fact that he was a first-round pick, you expect more out of the player, and he just doesn't live up to the hype. Now, when everything's perfect, he's got the I formation, he's got the fullback, he's got Gronk last year, he's got David Andrews. Everything looked good for Sonny Michel. But when you've asked him to do more because the offensive line hasn't been as good, and now you have no fullbacks right now, he hasn't been the same player that he was a season ago. It's just, I don't think you're getting the value you thought you were getting from a first-round draft pick.
Absolutely true. I agree. Second question. With the NBA in a new era, meaning no more LeBron and Cleveland, Miami, and back to Cleveland, and no more Golden State without Durant, they are not golden. Is everyone overlooking the fact that Washington, with the same team, took Toronto tonight and played them better than Golden State? Why is everyone just overlooking the Washington because their whole franchise dumpster fire?
You mean Philly?
No, sure. Washington, the Wizards. I mean, the Milwaukee Bucks.
Bucks. Well, I think the Bucks are in the top three in terms of the top four, the odds to win the finals.
Okay, yes, that would make sense. Okay, so my next question is based upon the prior statement. We're witnessing a new era in basketball. Based upon the fact that we have a new team coming together, and really the entire league is all shook up now, and a new formation starts. What are you seeing as an unseen force or factor that's going to emerge and come up in this year's NBA season? What can we expect?
What do you mean, from the league in general?
Listen, we've got Golden State without Durant. Toronto blew up their world championship team. Washington is back. Milwaukee's back. The Sixers are back. What's going to happen this year? We're entering a whole new era.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, and I appreciate the phone call, Paul. I'm actually more excited this year to watch the rest of the league, and I like the NBA a lot. I really enjoy watching the NBA. I've had league pass every year, but I'm more intrigued with this year more than other seasons, to Paul's point, because it's wide open. I don't want to say it's wide open, but it's more open than it's been in recent history. And remember, like, the Warriors were the overwhelming favorite the past couple of years. And we said, unless Kevin Durant comes down with an injury, or unless Steph Curry comes down with an injury, they're winning the championship. And that's how the Raptors won, because Kevin Durant wasn't there. So I think that's what makes the league interesting coming up in the 2019-2020 season, with the Celtics open up on the 23rd. The fact that it's open right now. Now, the Clippers and the Lakers look like the best teams on paper, but you also have the 76ers, you have the Milwaukee Bucks, so you have a lot of teams that you could make an argument for. And I felt like last year heading into the season, it was the Warriors and everybody else. And before that, when LeBron was spending his time in Miami, it was the Heat and everybody else. So for the first time in ages, we actually don't have like this overwhelming favorite that we usually have. So I think that will make the league interesting. I want to get to this, though, when it comes to the Patriots. By the way, if you want to hop on board, the number is 617-779-7937. So with the Patriots, one of the things that you look at in terms of the issues that they have in terms of the receiving core. Now, I've told you multiple times, I believe the guy that they should go after is A.J. Green. 1 year left on his contract. If he performs well, you can bring him back. He gets into the Patriots system, probably likes it here, has an opportunity to actually win at a high level, which he's never had when he's been a member of the Cincinnati Bengals. And not to mention the fact the guy comes with no drama whatsoever. That's the guy that I want the Patriots to acquire. That's the guy I would like to see them get. A guy like A.J. Green, he would be perfect with Tom Brady. And I believe also from the quarterback's perspective, he'd be a little bit happier. He'd go back to the Prince of Positivity rather than being negative all the time, which he's been over the past couple of weeks. But when I look at the Patriots right now, and we look at the issue they have in terms of the line isn't great right now, Marshall Newhouse has been horrible, they haven't been able to run the ball with any high level of efficiency outside a couple of games against bad teams, and Brady doesn't have the time that he's used to in the pocket, and also he doesn't have the weapons on the outside. So clearly there's an upgrade that they need to make. But the thing that I would point out with the Patriots is all these teams in the AFC have issues now. And the one team that I was really concerned about coming into the season was the Kansas City Chiefs. And I'll admit that I was wrong about one thing, and I said it last week on the show, and ordinarily I don't admit when I'm wrong, but I'm going to admit this. When I watched that Chiefs game a couple of weeks ago against the Colts, I came on here and I said, I don't look at it as, all right, well, the Colts had a blueprint for the Chiefs and other teams can do it. I didn't think that was the case, but now we're finding out that that was the blueprint that was laid out. So the Chiefs right now, they have some serious vulnerabilities. First of all, they can't run the football. They have not run the football with any high level of efficiency so far this season. Andy Reid, we know, he doesn't like to run the football. They were up 17-3 in the game the other day, 17-3 after the first quarter. They ran the ball only 11 times after that. That's a coaching error. That's coaching malpractice. Run out the clock and win the football game in the fourth quarter. They could never run the ball against the Texans. They didn't even attempt it, right? So that's obviously a blind spot for Andy Reid. But the other thing I would point out is I didn't think other teams are going to be able to do what the Colts did, where, okay, they played really well defensively, so they were able to dominate time of possession. They ran the ball 45 times. Because I said, well, the Colts have the best offensive line in the league, right? Or at least one of the top three. Quentin Nelson's one of the best linemen we've seen in the NFL in recent history, right? The guy's absolutely dominant. So I didn't see anybody being able to kind of duplicate that. If they were, everything was going to have to work out perfectly. And what we found out over the weekend is actually other teams can do it, because the Texans went out there and Deshaun Watson played great. He's the main reason they won the game. But the other thing you look at is Carlos Hyde is just a guy. Okay, Carlos Hyde is a guy that's played for five NFL teams. He ran the ball 26 times for 116 yards. So now that I've seen the Texans, who don't exactly have a great offensive line, they were horrible last year. They improved a little bit this year when they go out and they get a guy like Laremy Tunsil. But it's not exactly like the Texans have this unbelievable offensive line or anything along those lines. The biggest thing that they have is their passing game with Deshaun Watson, DeAndre Hopkins, and Will Fuller. But they were able to go to Kansas City and run the ball down their throat, because the Kansas City defense can't stop anything right now. They are 27th in total defense, giving up 406 yards per game, and they're 30th in rushing defense, giving up 161 yards per game. Think about that. .161 they're giving up on the ground a game. The only teams worse than the Chiefs defensively against the run are the Miami Dolphins and the Cincinnati Bengals, two teams that have not won a game this season. And that shouldn't be the case, because Kansas City's usually up in games. So teams usually shouldn't be trying to run the football on them. They're trying to come back, throw the ball, and you can still run the ball at the Chiefs at will. Okay, so I thought last week I wasn't going to overreact to one loss for the Chiefs, but I'm telling you now, it's not an overreaction. Okay, everybody's going to be able to run the ball against the Kansas City Chiefs. So the Chiefs need to make this huge upgrade from a defensive perspective, and it just doesn't seem like they're going to be able to do it. You can't just replace your entire defensive line and your linebacking core. Now, Frank Clark's supposed to be good. He has not lived up to the hype. Chris Jones is a good player, but he's been dealing with an injury. Their secondary is atrocious, and good news for the Patriots today. Jalen Ramsey was traded from the Jacksonville Jaguars to the Los Angeles Rams. So he is now out of the AFC. So maybe you could say, all right, maybe they can improve their passing defense. Well, Jalen Ramsey is no longer a viable option. If Patrick Peterson becomes available, there's going to be a bidding war there too. In all likelihood, the Eagles are going to get in on that. So Kansas City has given away draft picks recently to get a guy like Frank Clark. Are they going to go out there and get a guy to help their secondary? And even so, you're still going to be able to dominate that team in terms of running the football, even with the issues that the Patriots have right now running the ball. What we're finding out now is everybody in the NFL can run the football on the Kansas City Chiefs. So maybe we were looking at the Chiefs as this only team that you were really worried about in the AFC. Maybe the Chiefs have a lot more issues than we thought coming into the season. And I'll admit that I was wrong about it. I thought, hey, as long as you got Pat Mahomes, this team's going to be dominant. But right now, we're seeing they clearly have issues. So maybe we should kind of change course and look at some of the other teams in the AFC and see who is really the threat. Because I believe now, when we're looking at this on paper, the Texans are the biggest threat to the Patriots right now in the AFC. I'll tell you why in just a little bit. The number is 617-779-7937 if you want to hop on board right here on WEI Late Night.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, so I know there's been a lot of negativity when it comes to the Patriots, the lack of weapons for Tom Brady, etc., and I've definitely added to that. I've definitely not been shy to say that the Patriots clearly need an upgrade right now, and it has not worked out. And I believe they need to upgrade significantly if they want to actually win the Super Bowl again. Okay, but the one thing I'd look at right now is you look across this AFC, and all these teams have serious vulnerabilities. And we saw it with the Chiefs last week, and they looked awful against the Texans. And Pat Mahomes has not looked like himself over the past couple of weeks either. That defense for the Chiefs is awful. That's why I believe now you look at it. Are the Texans the biggest competition to the Patriots in the AFC? And if that's the case, are you worried about the AFC right now?
No, 617. God, please, no! Yeah. No!
617-779-7937 is the number. And you start to think about it. The Chiefs cannot defend the run. Not to mention the fact they can't run the ball. The coach doesn't want to run the ball, so they have massive issues. They don't care about time of possession at all, and now it's burning them. Maybe they'll learn from this. But if you look at the Texans right now, what the Texans can do, and from a statistical standpoint, the Texans' defense has not been great this season, but they have played a lot of really good offenses. They played the Saints with Drew Brees. They played the Chiefs last week with Pat Mahomes, and I get they've struggled. But nonetheless, they've played some really good offenses. If you look at it, what the Texans can do, I get the numbers have not been great this season, but they do have three guys up front that can get after you. DJ Reader, the nose tackle, has got 2.5 sacks. Whitney Mercilus has been a really good 5 sacks. And of course, they have JJ Watt. So if you look at the Texans right now, what they can do is they can expose one of your weaknesses, which is your offensive line, with three guys up front that can get after the quarterback. So there's that on that side of the field. Then you look at the other element, what they can do offensively in terms of they have arguably the best receiver in the NFL, DeAndre Hopkins. I know there's a lot of guys you can throw into the conversation, Julio Jones, etc. But DeAndre Hopkins definitely belongs in the conversation. He was an all-pro a season ago. Will Fuller dropped some passes over the weekend, but that guy's a legitimate bona fide deep threat. So I understand you have the best secondary of the NFL, but those are two weapons you're going to have to look out for. And Deshaun Watson, we saw him his first year against the Patriots. Now, last year, Bill Belichick got the better of Deshaun Watson. But remember, 2 years ago, Deshaun Watson made his first start in his career against the Patriots. And that game was tough for the Patriots. Remember, they needed that last-second throw that Brady hit Brandon Cooks in the end zone with to win that football game. Like, that was a back-and-forth game, and Watson lit up the Patriots' defense. So now you really look at the AFC, that may be your chief competitor, because you start to look at some of these other teams. The Browns, people are high on them. Baker Mayfield sucks. He has 11 interceptions, completing 55% of his passes. Are you really scared of the Baltimore Ravens with Lamar Jackson, a running quarterback that still has not proven he can throw the football with any level of consistency? You thought before the season the Colts would be in that conversation, but now without Andrew Luck, I don't consider them to be threats to the Patriots. Now, it's great what Frank Reich has done there, and they've definitely overachieved what people thought coming into the season with Jacoby Brissett as the starting quarterback, but I don't see them as legitimate threats, so I really don't see a lot in the AFC, even with some of the issues the Patriots have from an offensive perspective with the lack of weapons. I don't see a lot standing in your way in the AFC right now. I mean, the conference sucks. I mean, that's the good news for the Patriots in general. The league sucks. How many really good teams are there in the NFL right now? The Patriots, I guess you still throw the Chiefs in that category. The Texans would probably fit in that category. Although, again, the good thing about the Texans is Bill Belichick owns Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien's never beaten him. So that's another thing. Bill Belichick owns Bill O'Brien. That could be your chief competitor in the AFC, and Bill Belichick owns the opposing coach. Not to mention, Bill O'Brien can't run his nose. That guy doesn't know how to manage a clock. He's been awful. Listen to Sports Talk Radio in Houston one day. They'll be criticizing Bill O'Brien all day because the guy doesn't know how to manage the clock. Then you look at the NFC. Who's really good in the NFC? Seattle with Russell Wilson. Okay, I'll give you that.
49ers.
49ers, yeah, but again,
you got to give it because their defense.
Sure.
Their defense is showing up this year.
No, that's fair. I just don't trust right now. I don't think we know enough about Jimmy Garoppolo to say, hey, if you're down 14 in a game, he can bring you back. Reality of the situation is this. Jimmy Garoppolo has been a game manager in San Francisco. But again, okay, so San Francisco, you throw them into the fold. You still got to see them in a postseason. Green Bay, although they should have lost last night to Detroit. Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. The defense at least has improved a little bit this year. The Saints, but again, you got to see Drew Brees back on the football field before you anoint them. So that's what, 5-6 teams in the NFL that you could say are really, really good? So again, the Patriots are in the driver's seat in the AFC, especially considering what happened last week. Kansas City dropping that game to Houston, considering Houston already has two losses, and you're going to have them on the schedule. Kansas City already has two losses, and both those losses are in the AFC. The Patriots in the driver's seat to win the regular season in the AFC, so to speak, and get that number one seed and be in prime position to host the AFC championship game, unlike they did a season ago. So the Patriots benefit again because the league sucks, and that's not to diminish the Patriots. They've been dominant defensively and all that different type of stuff. I still have my doubts about the offense, and they deserve a ton of credit for being 6-0, but a lot of the league sucks right now. That's just the reality of the situation. The other thing I want to mention real quickly with the NFL, because I do want to get into what LeBron James said yesterday and some of the crap that's coming out of his mouth. But before I do that, I wanted to mention this. So that Monday Night Football game last night, what an absolute disaster for the league. So Trey Flowers, old friend Trey Flowers, he got screwed over not once but twice by the league last night in terms of the officiating. So 10 minutes and 16 seconds left. Detroit's up 22-13. They sack Aaron Rodgers for a loss of 11 yards, by the way. Trey Flowers is whistled for illegal hands to the face, except he was grabbing the guy in the chest, which is how you're taught, the technique you're taught. That's what Trey Flowers was talking about after the game. So that extends the drive, and then Aaron Rodgers finds Alan Lazard for a touchdown. So instead of it being a 22-13 game and the Packers punting the ball back to the Lions, the Packers go in and they score to cut it to 22-20 in the fourth quarter. Okay, so once the Lions get screwed over by the officiating crew, then with a minute and 45 seconds left in the fourth quarter, third and four at the Detroit 16, Rodgers is forced to throw an incomplete pass. Trey Flowers again called for illegal hands to the face when, again, it was nowhere close. This was one of the big storylines all over ESPN, all over the national highlight shows today, was that blatant miscall by the officials. And then in that particular situation, that allowed the Packers to essentially run the clock down to one and then kick the field goal at the end of the game with Mason Crosby. Now you can say, well, the Packers still could have taken the lead there, and they probably would have with 1:45 left. But again, they take a 3-point lead, or rather a 1-point lead, 23-22, and Matthew Stafford's got a 140 left in the game to go down the field and set up the game-winning field goal. So not once but twice the Lions were screwed over when it comes to illegal hands to the face on Trey Flowers. And then you look at this. They were flagged for too many men on the field earlier in the game, and this allowed the Packers to extend their drive, go in for a touchdown. When they had 12 men on the field, it extended the Packers' drive. Okay, fine, that's the right call by the officiating crew. But then later on in the game, the Packers actually had 13 men on the field, and they weren't whistled for the same penalty. So the Lions got completely screwed over last night by the lack of high-level officiating in that game last night. And it just seems like to me that in the year 2019, we should be able to fix these things on the field, right? This should not be a problem for the league where we're talking about the officiating crew the day after the game, where Booger McFarlane is on the broadcast last night, and rightfully so, ripping the officiating crew. When John Perry, a former official for the NFL, he's talking about how blatant that was and how bad of a miscall that was. That was the storyline coming out of the NFL game last night, which is an awful look for the league. An awful look for the league, not to mention the fact that the league looks awful that they made this new rule where coaches can basically challenge pass interference. They never get overturned. They never get overturned. Remember the one last week? The Patriots benefited from this. Golden Tate, blatant interference on Golden Tate, and the officials don't change it. They do not change it. So they made this rule last year to basically appease Saints fans because the Saints got screwed over in that NFC Championship game. But essentially, the officials are never overturning it. So basically, it was just a fake rule change. They're not going to overturn these things. And now you saw Matt Patricia last night. He was gun-shy to throw the flag on a blatant pass interference because he saw what happened last week. The officials aren't overturning this crap, right? So then you look at it going forward. What can the NFL do? I think it's pretty damn simple. You have a sky cam. Just have an official that's there on site, like you already have, where you can just overrule these things. Okay, well, hey, guys, do you think the officials want to deal with this after this? You think the officiating crew last night wants to deal with this crap? Because what you could just do is, it's 2019, you look at the replay, say, hey, that actually wasn't illegal hands to the face, rather, on Trey Flowers. Let's overturn that and basically make the Packers kick a field goal now, and let's get the rule right on the field. Because I think the officials would want that too, where they don't look awful in terms of basically they're the storyline. It looks bad for the league. It looks bad for the officials. If you have the ability, which we do in 2019, to fix some of these calls, why don't we fix them? We have all these other reviews that we're looking at forever. Why don't we have the ability to change some of these calls so the Detroit Lions aren't screwed over in a game last night? That's what it looks like to me. And we saw some of the narrative today, right? You know what looked really bad for the league? And I'm not saying there's any truth to this whatsoever. You know what looked really bad for the league? People were pointing out Matt Patricia once wore a clown t-shirt with Roger Goodell's face. Remember that? The clown t-shirt that he had with Roger Goodell after the Patriots won the Super Bowl in 2016. He was wearing that shirt. People are saying today there was stuff all over social media. Well, think about who's getting screwed over. The Lions. Think about the team getting screwed over. The Lions, who the coach of the team once wore a Roger Goodell clown shirt. So just think about that. That's the narrative the NFL was getting today. I can't imagine they want this going forward. So why don't they just fix the officiating problem? It's very simple. Just be able to overturn these things, have an on-site, in-the-booth guy that can look at the sky cam and say, hey, guys, you messed this one up. Let's change the call. It seems like it's blatantly obvious in the year 2019, but for whatever reason, they don't want to do it. All right, a lot more to get into, including these comments that LeBron James made about Daryl Morey could not have come across more clueless. I'll get into that in just a little bit. You're listening to Brian Barrett right here on WEI Late Night.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.